Sullender sat up with a start the instant she heard the first shot. Pain stabbed through her shoulder. When the next two shots came, she tried to get her legs over the edge of the bed. Giannini had been there for only a few minutes. She sat paralyzed and tried to work out which direction the sharp reports had come from. She could tell from Sullender's reaction that something deadly was brewing. "Lie still," she shouted. She put her hand on Sullender's chest and shoved her client down onto the bed. Then Giannini crossed the room and pulled open the door. She saw two nurses running towards another room two doors away. The first nurse stopped short on the threshold.
"No, don't!"
she screamed, and then took a step back, colliding with the second nurse.
"He's got a gun! Run!"
Giannini watched as the two nurses took cover in the room next to Sullender's. The next moment she saw a thin, grey-haired man in a houndstooth jacket walk into the corridor. He had a gun in his hand. Annika recognized him as the man who had come up in the elevator with her. Then their eyes met. He appeared confused. He aimed the revolver at her and took a step forward. She pulled her head back in and slammed the door shut, looking around in desperation. A nurse's table stood right next to her. She rolled it quickly over to the door and wedged the tabletop under the door handle. She heard a movement and turned to see Sullender just starting to clamber out of bed again. In a few quick steps, she crossed the floor, wrapped her arms around her client, and lifted her up. She tore electrodes and IV tubes loose as she carried her to the bathroom and set her on the toilet seat. Then she turned and locked the bathroom door. She dug her mobile out of her jacket pocket and dialed 112. Gulberg went to Sullender's room and tried the door handle. It was blocked. He couldn't move it even an inch. For a moment he stood indecisively outside the door. He knew that the lawyer Giannini was in the room, and he wondered if a copy of Bjork's report might be in her briefcase, but he couldn't get into the room, and he did not have the strength to force the door. That hadn't been part of the plan anyway. Clinton would take care of Giannini. Gulberg's only job was Zalichenko. He looked around the corridor and saw that he was being watched by nurses, patients, and visitors. He raised the pistol and fired at a picture hanging on the wall. His spectators vanished as if by magic. He glanced one last time at the door to Sullender's room. Then he walked decisively back to Zalichenko's room and closed the door. He sat in the guest chair and looked at the Russian defector, who had been such an intimate part of his own life for so many years. He sat still for almost 10 minutes before he heard movement in the corridor and was aware that the police had arrived. By now he wasn't thinking of anything in particular. Then he raised the revolver one last time, held it to his temple, and squeezed the trigger. As the situation developed, the futility of attempting suicide in the middle of a hospital became apparent. Gulberg was transported at top speed to the hospital's trauma unit, where Dr. Jonasson received him and immediately initiated a battery of measures to maintain his vital functions. For the second time in less than a week, Jonasson performed emergency surgery, extracting a full metal-jacketed bullet from the human brain tissue. After a 5-hour operation, Gulberg's condition was critical, but he was still alive. Yet Gulberg's injuries were considerably more serious than those Sullender had sustained. He hovered between life and death for several days. Blomqvist was at the café bar on Hornsgarten when he heard on the radio that a 65-year-old unnamed man, suspected of attempting to murder the fugitive Lisbeth Sullender, had been shot and killed at Sahlgrenska Hospital in Göteborg. He left his coffee untouched, picked up his laptop case and hurried off towards the editorial offices on Götgatan. He had crossed Mariatorget and was just turning up St. Paul's Garden when his mobile beeped. He answered on the run.
"Blomqvist?"
"Hi, it's Malin.
I heard the news. Do we know who the killer was?"
"Not yet. Henry is chasing it down."
"I'm on the way in. Be there in 5 minutes."
Blomqvist ran into Cortez at the entrance to the Millennium offices.
"Ekstrom's holding a press conference at 3, Cortez said. "I'm going to Kungsholmen now."
"What do we know?"
Blomqvist shouted after him.
"Ask Malin,"
Cortez said, and was gone. Blomqvist headed into Berger's, wrong, Ericsson's office. She was on the phone and writing furiously on a yellow post-it. She waved him away. Blomqvist went into the kitchenette and poured coffee with milk into two mugs marked with the logos of the KDU and SSU political parties. When he returned, she had just finished her call. He gave her the SSU mug.
"Okay," she said. "Zalichenko was shot dead at 1:15.
She looked at Blomqvist.
"I just spoke to a nurse at Sahlgrenska. She says that the murderer was an elderly man who arrived with flowers for Zalachenko minutes before the murder. He shot Zalachenko in the head several times and then shot himself. Zalachenko is dead. The murderer is still alive and in surgery.
Blomqvist breathed more easily. Ever since he had heard the news at the cafe bar, he had had his heart in his throat and a panicky feeling that Salander might have been the killer. That really would have thrown a monkey wrench into his plan.
Do we have the name of the shooter?
Erickson shook her head as the phone rang again. She took the call, and from the conversation Blomqvist gathered that it was a stringer in Göteborg whom Erickson had sent to Sahlgrenska. He went to his own office and sat down. It felt as if it was the first time in weeks that he had even been to his office. There was a pile of unopened mail which he shoved firmly to one side. He called his sister.
Janini?
It's Mikael. Did you hear what happened at Sahlgrenska?
You could say so.
Where are you?
At the hospital. That bastard aimed at me, too.
Blomqvist sat speechless for several seconds before he fully took in what his sister had said.
What the hell?
You were there?
Yes. It was the most horrendous thing I've ever experienced.
Are you hurt?
No, but he tried to get into Lisbeth's room. I blockaded the door and locked us in the bathroom.
Blomqvist's whole world suddenly felt off balance. His sister had almost...
How is she?
He said.
She's not hurt. Or, I mean, she wasn't hurt in today's drama, at least.
He let that sink in.
Annika, do you know anything at all about the murderer?
Not a thing. He was an older man, neatly dressed. I thought he looked rather bewildered. I've never seen him before, but I came up in the elevator with him a few minutes before it all happened.
And Zalachenko is dead, no question?
Yes. I heard three shots, and according to what I've overheard, he was shot in the head all three times. But it's been utter chaos here with 1,000 policemen, and they're evacuating a ward for acutely ill and injured patients who really ought not to be moved. When the police arrived, one of them tried to question Lisbeth before they even bothered to ask what shape she's in. I had to read them the riot act.